Well, needless to say, brethren, we have a time and day and age that we're living in that is indeed, in many respects, filled with a lot of trepidation. It's filled with a lot of apprehension. Things that you read and you see and things that we experience in this what we can call very fast-paced life generates a lot of anxiety sometimes. Fear of the unknown with jobs and pressures and stresses that are surrounding us on a daily basis, if not on a weekly basis. And if you're a news junkie, you just exacerbate the situation because you expand your concerns, your horizon, your views, your outlook on a broader scale and in a bigger fashion. And that just adds to the angst oftentimes that contributes to fretfulness and worry and all the things that go along with concerns with respect to the geopolitical conditions, the political and diplomatic hypocrisies that we see, so many misunderstandings and miscues and misrepresentations of people that, frankly, in politics today just flat out rightly lie, whether it's nation to nation or party to party or leader to leader. And then you combine that with our own personal lives of different things that we find ourselves contending with, whether it's relationships, interpersonal expressions with each other, and all the things that just go along with just living, you know, on the job, trying to talk to the boss or try to talk to underlings that you might be managing, trying to manage your department, staying on budget. If you're in sales and marketing, hitting your numbers, getting everybody to sign on the dotted lines so that you can maintain your job, especially in an economy that is still somewhat depressed and recidivative. So in all due respect, we have a lot of things that we fret about, that we worry about, along the lines of even diseases. You know, remember the old SARS thing that was going around, and now we have Ebola concerns, people that are concerned about and worried about whether or not they're going to contract these things, whether we're going to be victimized by perhaps some kind of a homegrown terrorist attack. A lot of things in the air, just a lot of things that contribute to our daily lives, not to mention the bills that we have to face, and of course, surprises in life, whether they be like accidents, illnesses, and health that pop up, and all of a sudden you're caught by surprise, not expecting something like that, and then all of a sudden now you're saddled with this news of something that you just weren't expecting. And we wrestle with these things. We wrestle. We wrestle with family relations. We wrestle with siblings. We wrestle with children, mates. We wrestle with all kinds of things that we're contending with from a day-to-day basis. And it does oftentimes affect us. And if we're not careful, we can become infected. We can become diseased with what I call a very strong emotional and mental albatross if we allow ourselves to allow all these things that I just kind of quickly thumbnail sketched affect us in a negative way. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. As a matter of fact, I want to kind of get into the weeds about this emotional infection, this, what you could say, mental and spiritual disease. And we're all subject to it. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be so bold as to say that everybody in this room has experienced a degree of it in one way, shape, or form or another in their life at some time due to something and or slash some things that have affected you and have caused an effect of this particular disease. What is it? Depression. That's what I want to talk about today. Dealing with depression. If you want a title with regard to this particular sermon, that would probably be the best to go ahead and characterize it as, because I'd like to spend the remaining minutes that I have here on this particular topic. It's a topic that is quite common among us human beings living especially in this high-tech society that we live in. You would think that we would, with all the gadgets and gidgets and gizmos that we have to make our lives easier, that our lives would be easier. But what do? Like Murphy's Law, things expand to the time allotted. So the more gidgets and gadgets and gizmos you get, the more you add on to yourself to just kind of stretch yourself out even more so. And you end up attempting to try to do more things in less time by utilizing the gadgets of gadgets and the gizmos to multitask. Lo and behold, it just seems to add to the stresses that we deal with and find ourselves contending with. But nevertheless, I want to talk about this because it does us all well to be at least aware of the fact that that is a real, legitimate pothole in the course of our lives as human beings in dealing with what we deal with. And at some point, sooner or later, as you're going to come to see, everybody, because if there happens to be an exception in this room and no one has ever experienced this particular infection, then you will, I guarantee it, at some point in the course of your life. And we're going to talk a little bit about it today and get into the weeds about it, as I say, a little bit in detail. In starting off, I want to, though, go over here to John chapter 16. John chapter 16, first things first, and I want to bring this to all of our attention because Jesus here lays down some thoughts that are certainly very good ideas to keep in mind and advice to keep close to one's heart with respect to living life just in general and in the course of its unfolding. Here in John chapter 16, and of course many of you know the context here, this was the night in which he was betrayed, which commences with the foot washing over there, I think, around in John 13, and then proceeds down here through this whole course of events that happened that evening, ultimately resulting in his betrayal, crucifixion, and of course resurrection later on, then his reappearance some days later, and then even beyond that, some days even further later than that, appearing again and showing himself to Thomas, who was not there at the first meeting. But at any rate, here he states this in the course of that evening, as he comes down here, he says, Jesus answers them in verse 31 of John 16 and says, "Do you now believe? Behold, the hour comes, yes, is now come, that you shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone, and yet I'm not alone, because the Father is with me. But," here he says in verse 33, and here's where I want to go with this, "these things," all the things preceding up to this, you can read chapter 16, 15, 14, and 13 later on at your own convenience, but he says here as he's beginning to conclude before they went to the Garden of Gethsemane, he says in verse 33, "These things I have spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace." That is, you might have resolve, you may have comfort, you may have an ease about your life in understanding what I've just told you. And in order for you to understand all that context, you need to go back and read 15, 14, 13, and so on. But I don't have the time to digress there. You can do that at another time. But that's part of leading up to why he's saying what he's saying in this summation statement here in verse 33. And then he says again, secondly, "In the world you will have," in this particular case, "tribulation." And it comes from the Greek word thlipsis. And it basically means in the world you will have pressure. It doesn't only mean, you know, bombs going off and nuclear holocaust and all this kind of stuff. Keep in mind, what he's saying here, this Greek word means pressure. It means you will have affliction in your life. Yeah, you'll have persecution if you're a Christian at some point. People will mock you. They'll make fun of you. Because kicking against the pricks and going against society isn't the easiest thing if you're a, here's the operative, true Christian. You can be a traditional Christian and get along very well in this world. But start practicing Christianity for real, and you will find you're kicking against the pricks. And that's biblical, by the way. Point being, it is not an easy way of life to be a true Christian. And that's the point. And so consequently, Jesus said, and very forthrightly, and correctly, and accurately, you will have trouble. You're going to have tribulation. This Greek word, as I say, it means burdens. It means anguish. So this isn't just about being persecuted and, you know, having your head cut off or all these kinds of things that we generate in our minds, tribulation, you know, the end of the world and all this. No. It's also about just plain living. You're going to have trouble in your life because you're a Christian, because you've taken on one of the biggest and most dastardly fights a human being could take on. You've taken on your nature, to fight your nature, to fight your temper, to fight your anger, to fight your frustrations, to fight your own lustful pulls that your eyes get you in trouble with, or that your flesh gets you in trouble with, or your vanity, your ego, your pride gets you in trouble with. You will have trouble. You will have anguish. You're going to get into a wrestling match with your emotions and mental mind thinking ideas, that you will be going through emotional, mental, and spiritual contortions. In some cases, even causing possibly depression in your own life due to guilt because you missed the mark in your life. But that's a good thing. That's what Christianity is all about. Because there is a great and wonderful prize to be obtained. And that goes to the third point here that Jesus says. He says, yeah, you're going to have trouble in the world, but be of encouragement. That's what that Greek word means. Be encouraged. He says here to be bold, to have confidence. Be happy in your trouble, is what Jesus is saying. Why? Because the bottom line is, the big perspective I want you to understand is, I've overcome the world for you. Which means that this life is just so much life. There is something far greater beyond this life. And that's why I always say, brethren, keep your eye on the ball. The big ball, the big target, the one that supersedes this physical dimension that you're currently operating in. Because this is only the start. It's only the commencement of life. Of life. Life really begins when you maximize the material that God wants you to have, which comes after your second birth. You've been born once, and here you are, and here I am. Yep, born of water, out of my mother's womb, here I come. Water breaks, and I come sliding out. And here I am, flesh and blood, living color. And I've been here now for about 63 years, sometimes smiling, sometimes crying, sometimes frowning, sometimes worried and wringing my hands too throughout my life. But nevertheless, here I am. But I, as I hope you, have a bigger objective, a bigger goal in mind, that you never allow this life, whatever this life can throw at you, to fog that up, to block your view of it, to cause you to not be able to get around, above, under, or over that particular obstacle. Now, if we're not careful, and we have to be very careful because life can be brutal in many ways, it can be very overwhelming. Sometimes life can take on such a course that sometimes we may even feel like we're being steamrolled. One thing comes after another sometimes in life. A lot of things can be compounded, and the complexities are almost indescribable in some cases due to the fact of how life can sometimes unfold in our current experiences of situations we find ourselves in. So how do you fight this gray haze? How do you kick back at it and at least keep it at bay? You know, keep it so that it minimizes its effect on your performance in your life. Because depression, if you allow it, like the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, before you know it, the whole body's in there with you. You know, if you allow the nose to get in through incrementalism and you continuing to concede, continuing to surrender, continuing to, what you could say, not fight back or attempt to take a countermeasure, before you know it, you can find yourself depressed to the point where you're dysfunctional, to the point where you can even become delusional, to the point where you can even become, through depression, physically sick, because a lot of our physical ailments start right up here. Because the way we emotionally manage life determines a lot of things. The way we mentally manage life determines a lot of things. The way we spiritually manage life determines a lot about our physical well-being. If you're always ramped up, if you're always high anxiety, if that's the way you operate, chances are you're going to be driving yourself into perhaps a high blood pressure problem. Hypertension, they call it. Hypertension leads to a whole variety, a whole host of all different kinds of physical maladies. Whether it's kidney disease, liver malfunctions, all different types of sorts of different physical ailments that can come from these things. So it's important, I think anyway, to at least attempt to try to understand this word depression. And I want to use the blackboard here a little bit today because I want to use some of these things we're going to go through by steps, hoping that perhaps a picture being worth a thousand words will help you better to comprehend where we're going with some of this. So at the top here, I'm going to use this board kind of in half. Over here on this section, though, we'll start here. We're talking about depression. And it's important we understand this because understanding your enemy is a good idea. Now, depression comes in two ways. It comes in two, let me say, forms. One is chronic, and the other is acute. And I don't mean cute. It's just acute, temporary, short-lived. Chronic is long-term. Chronic depression is our enemy. That is the enemy. You do not want to suffer from chronic depression. Chronic depression can lead, like I said, to a whole host of different types of items, and of which most certainly is a, and I'm not trying to be cute here, but I will say it this way, a killjoy. It kills your joy. It kills your joy. So it's important that we understand that chronic depression is indeed the real enemy. Acute depression actually can be good. It can be healthy. It can be motivational. It can be very edifying in one's life. As a matter of fact, if you'll turn with me over here to the book of Ecclesiastes, King Solomon had something to say about the sad times. Over here in chapter 7. He says here, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Now he goes on here to where I really want to focus in on. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. In other words, in the house of sadness, in the house when things slow down and you have to internalize something, can be very edifying for you. The experience can help you perhaps to be a bigger and better person, more sound, more prudent, wiser for the experience as a result of whatever that experience was that drove you to the acute depression you experience. Nothing wrong with acute depression. Acute depression can be very, very helpful and can be, as Solomon points out here, very edifying and quite a learning experience. Here in verse 5, we read again and reinforced along the same theme, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This is also vanity. So we see here that even Solomon recognized that there's nothing wrong with being slowed down and being told about something that causes you a little bit of depression, a little bit of sadness in the experience of your life. But make no mistake, chronic depression can lead to a whole host of different types issues. Misanthropic thinking, distrustful. You can develop into becoming a very suspicious person that leads to being somewhat considered or categorized as a leery person, a weary person. And that leads to cynicism, can lead to just a whole host of negative outlooks that can cause you to be kind of like just a real downer to be around. You're just not a happy person to be around. You're the kind of person that drags things down because you're always suspicious. You're always distrustful. You don't believe in anything. It's kind of a paradigm that you operate in that has caused you, even in facial expressions, because as you get older, you'll wear the face of depression. You will, if it's chronic. And consequently, it does find itself manifesting in different ways. So let's understand. Now, I want to take a moment and understand this, what I call common cold of mental illness. Because here's one thing about chronic depression that is so beguiling. It's insidious in this way. You can be suffering from it and not even realize it. That's what's so insidious about it. You can be suffering from it and not even realize it. So we need to know our enemy. We need to know what this chronic depression looks like. Where does it come from? How does it rear its head? What is it, the venue by which it kind of tangles us up in, and the web that it moves in our minds and in our hearts, our emotions, and so on, so that we can better, hopefully, be able to contend with it. So keep this in mind. The depression results oftentimes from loss. That is a very big premise that you want to keep in mind, that depression generally results from loss. So either chronic or acute generally results from loss. And the nature of depression is reactive. You lose something, you react to it. Lost a dog, I get depressed. Lost my job, I not only get depressed, I cry. I lose a loved one, my mom, my dad, my mate, my child. These are real losses. I react. I react, and in so doing, oftentimes, it can become very depressing. Remarriage, sickness, accidents, aging, paralysis, negligence of something. All kinds of things, brethren, that you can think of. Betrayal, you become victimized of betrayal. You become a victim of some kind of a scam and lose a lot of money. Losses can be very depressing. And depression generally comes from the result of a loss. Now, again, perspective is important. Over here in 1 Corinthians, I've mentioned this before. I want to take your attention back to it one more time to remind you of this. Chapter 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It's very important that we keep this in mind. And that is in verse 13. There's no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not permit you to be tempted above that you are able. And that includes our losses, brethren. Losses can be temptations as well, to do things to yourself. Again, talking about depression in this context, to allow yourself to get overly depressed about something. Keep in mind, though, whatever your loss may be, there isn't anyone that it hasn't been before you that has lost similar. What you and I experience is indeed common to man. And so keep in mind, whatever it is that we are being tempted with, whether it be in losses, in the category of losses, and the risks of depression loom its head around us, the fact of it is, there is assuredly this fact that we would not be tempted or confronted with anything that we are not able to be dealing with. In other words, here it says, but God is faithful, who will not permit you to be tempted above that you are able. So whatever it is in your particular case, the bottom line, as far as God's concerned, the fact that you're contending with it, and let me take a moment now just to rephrase this, the fact you're contending with it implies you can handle it. So regardless, if you're dealing with it, the fact of it is, God believes you can handle it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be faced with it. God is not out to get you. I saw a movie the other day, and again, it was on the internet, I think it was, and it was about a girl who had MS. I don't know if maybe some of you saw this on YouTube, but she essentially was diagnosed with MS at around the age of 12 or 13. It was a real moving 12-minute movie about this girl and this issue she had with MS, and she turned out to be one of the fastest young girls on the college level in a sprint, and it takes you through the course of all of her training and everything, and how when she would run, she actually could not feel her legs, but she could still run. And as long as in the beginning, when she could feel her legs, she could get started, the fact was her mind, it was, she said, a real weird feeling, because as she was going around the track, her legs would become so numb, because as her body temperature would heat up, the MS would be aggravated, and it killed and deadened her nerves. And she, because she couldn't feel the pain in her legs, would outrun everybody. And so she used it to her advantage in that regard. But the bottom line is she'd pace herself with the other girls, and then at the last home stretch, she'd put it on, you know. And bottom line was, though, she said in the beginning when she was first diagnosed, when she was 13 years old, and so often this, and this is my whole point on saying and sharing this story with you, is the fact that oftentimes we ourselves, when confronted with something, we say what? Why did God allow this? What did I do? I'm trying to do everything right. I'm a good person. Why would God allow this to happen to me? That's what people do. That's what people do. Instead of saying, wow, what a wonderful opportunity I have here to build character. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be tested in this fashion, because I really do need the growth. Wonderful opportunity. Thanks, coach. But I'm not trying to be cute. But in essence, we're being told here, look, if you're dealing with it, if you're going to be contending with this, you can handle it. I believe it. The coach is saying, I believe it. And this girl's coach, every time she would finish the race, the real touching part about this, the real touching part was she would be blasting to the finish line. I mean, she is running and running and running. And the way she could, by this time now, when she stopped, she would literally fall. So what her coach would do is he'd be standing there at the finish line, and she would become running, and then she'd slow down, of course, after she passed the finish line, and fall into his arms. And that's how he would break her fall, catch her, pick her up, and put her down, and they would ice her down so she could feel her legs again and bring her body temperature down. Touching story, but the point of it is she turned what certainly was a setback in anyone's life into a real advantage in that respect for her. Now, go back here, though, to Ecclesiastes again, because I want to point something out here, and I think it's important that all of us recognize this. We often use this scripture at funerals because it illustrates what life really is all about. And life is a variety of experiences that do incur losses. And that's why I'm saying, if you have not experienced depression, then what you're telling me is you have not yet incurred a loss of any magnitude. But once you do, at some point, whether it's a pet dying, whether it's an accident you're in, whether it's something that you put upon someone else and you feel guilty for doing it, which hopefully you would, or some whatever it is that incurred a loss, what you're telling me is if you haven't been depressed, you haven't basically experienced loss of any magnitude. Because what life is all about, as you will see right here from the words of Solomon, is about losses. Look at this. To everything there's a season, chapter 3, verse 1 of Ecclesiastes, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. In other words, there are seasonal changes in our lives, and there is a purpose to every seasonal change in your life. You know, people say, oh, it's terrible getting old. Well, maybe. But I found, personally for me, in getting old, I've become more vigilant toward my health. It has taught me to be more prudent about my handling of this temple of God, of where when I was younger, I was a bit more reckless. I was a bit more cutting corners about here and there. Yeah, I'll stop at McDonald's, nothing against McDonald's. But, you know, if you live on it, you got a problem because it's not good for you in the long run if you're living that kind of diet and eating that kind of stuff. But my point that I want to make here is there is in everything of life a purpose, and there are seasonal changes in your life. You are young, you're different when you're young. When you get adolescent, you're different than when you were younger. You become teenagers. You have a whole different life. You go on to college. Your life continues to go through seasonal changes that impact different purposes and objectives and goals in our lives that affect us emotionally in different ways. And that's why the wise king here of Israel states, a time to be born, a time to die. That's loss. Time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck. That's loss. That's lost because you got to replant to replace. A time to kill. That's loss. Time to kill. A time to heal. A time to break down. And a time to build up. A time to weep. A time to laugh. A time to mourn. And a time to dance. A time to cast away stones. A time to gather stones. A time to embrace. And a time to be far from, the Hebrew means, to be far from embracing. Did you ever get to a point in your life where you just leave me alone. I want to be alone. Just leave me alone. I need some time. Did you ever hear somebody tell you that? I need some time, Bill. I just need some time. Leave me alone. I need some quiet time. People say that. They get into those moods where sometimes quietness and just being surrounded by their own thoughts and letting them sort through it is more effective for them and more helpful for them than it is like in Job's case. Remember when he's surrounded by his buddies after he was being cursed with all these things and his buddies came around him and all that and they started talking and stuff. And you see the two sides of that coin where when they originally came, they didn't say one word to Job for 1 week. For 1 week, they just sat there not saying a word to Job. Can you imagine that? Here come all your buddies, surround you because they know that you know you got boils, you lost your wife, you lost your kids, you lost all these things, you lost your house, you lost all this loss. You're depressed beyond expression. Your buddies come around you and don't say one word for 1 week. They just sit there with you and look at you. I think I would say, don't look at me. Leave me alone. Why don't you go back where you came from? But these were his buddies. And then, of course, you've got the other side of the coin where they wouldn't shut up and they kept talking and judging him and all that stuff. But that's another story. But it goes on here. A time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek. Not necessarily time to get. A time to seek is what the Hebrew could also be translated as. And a time to lose. And there you are, loss. A time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend or to tear or cut out, and a time to sow. A time to keep silent, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. Now, when you get into all these, you see that the one point and the counterpoint generally deals with gain and loss, loss and gain and loss and gain. And therein lies the contrast of the two, what you could say, extremes to give and make us understand that life is made up of happy times and sad times, good times and bad times, joyful times and depressing times. So depression becomes an important part of the equation here in regards to understanding it. So two types of depression, chronic and acute. Keep in mind, it generally comes from losses, and the nature of depression is reactive. And so it is important that you get a handle on you and begin to learn how to instill, what did Jesus say, possess your soul in? What did Jesus say, possess your souls in? Patience. Patience. So instead of reactive, when something happens, you patiently allow yourself to ease in to the loss if at all possible. Or if it's a surprise and an accident, you do the best you can to constrain and throttle your ease into the emotional pool of now what you're going to get into based on whatever it is you're facing. Now, it becomes important that we understand that how you do this is to identify, that's the enemy, to identify the nature of and what you could say types of losses that we're dealing with. And so the types of loss generally comes also in two forms. One is a tangible loss, and the other is non-tangible. Tangible losses basically are easy to identify. I bankrupt my business. I was in business, I bankrupted. That's a tangible loss. I bankrupt my business. I mismanaged it. I did it. I spent all the money. I even embezzled a few things because I was making some good money and I bought Corvettes and Maseratis when I shouldn't have. And I just didn't do right. That's tangible. I lost my business because I mismanaged it. So now I'm depressed. I'm depressed. Now, what's intangible about this is what will people think? That's intangible. Can I control that? Can't control that. Can't control that. So, with not being able to control it, it even becomes harder to deal with because people are going to think what they want to think in regards to what I did, right? And so if I worry about it and if I allow it to have any impact on me, I will just exacerbate my situation and or make a bad situation worse. Here's another tangible example. Rejected. Rejected by friends, maybe business associates, maybe even my mate. That's tangible. I can quantify that. I can identify it. I've got it down pat. I've got it 20-20. I really do. And what's intangible is what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Why am I being rejected? Well, there is, as you can say, potential of learning here. But my point is, this is intangible at this point. This is intangible at this point. This is tangible. Another example, just for one more. I mistreat a friend. And what's non-tangible is he may not never accept me again. In other words, no way to win his friendship back. That's intangible. I mistreated him. That's tangible. I mistreated him. What is non-tangible is the fact that I've lost in my mind. Now I'm fretting over the fact that he will never forgive me again. That's non-tangible at this point. The dimension of loss and its complexity, the risks and potentials, and how we manage the intangible determines, brethren, the degree of depression that we will experience. Managing, controlling the intangible can determine the degree of depression that you experience. And that's important to understand. Because these things here, as far as the depression is concerned, you can quantify that. You know exactly what's going on, and you know how to respond. The other things are things that are not there yet. They're non-tangible. They could be there, imagined or threatened, or threatening, I should say, but nevertheless, still not there. Still not there. And that's important to recognize in terms of the potential of being able to manage through your non-tangible and tangible losses. This needs to be controlled and or managed. Otherwise, you run the case, as I say, of being aggravating your situation to making it far worse than what it is. Focusing on the tangible is very important, and an important premise of controlling your depression is to make all your types of losses tangible. Make it real in dealing with it. In dealing with it. So that it becomes, what you could say, easier to accept and then get on out of the denial stage into the ability of adjusting to whatever it is and required to make those adjustments. Over here in Psalms chapter 71 is key to doing this. And it's important that you implement this through the faith that you have in God. Because there's a supernatural factor in all of this, brethren, that we have to add in as an element in dealing with this. Because we are emotional, we are mental, we are spiritual, and we are physical human beings. We are chemically, what you could say, affected by the way we think, the way we feel. And so it becomes, therefore, very important, too, that we add the God factor in this. David mentions this very clearly here in Psalms 71. As Solomon said, we will go through life in so many conditions or faced with so many conditions, and they will bring forward losses. David points out here to keep this in mind in chapter 71 of the book of Psalms. In you, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be put to confusion. Deliver me in your righteousness. Cause me to escape. Incline your ear unto me and save me. Be thou my strong habitation whereunto I may continually resort. And see, brethren, a lot of this right here is out of your control. The non-tangible, really, the best thing you can do for yourself is to eschew the thinking of that and put all that into God's hands. And focus on how to deal with the tangible. Because the tangible is the most important in dealing with it. And that could be enough to deal with, let alone adding to your baggage of worry and fret over things that you can't control in the non-tangible category. Leave that in God's hands. Don't worry about that. And also, of course, bring God into this too to help you to deal with the tangible losses, whether they be emotional, whether they be mental, or whether or not they be spiritual. Because it is important that we deal with these things and not allow them to get away from us and to cause us to, as I say, make a bad situation get worse by worrying about the non-tangible that we have no control over. He says here in verse 4, deliver me, O God, out of thy hand of the wicked, out of the hand of the unrighteous and cruel man. For you are my hope, O Lord God. You are my trust from my youth. By thee have I been holden up from the womb. You are he that took me out of my mother's bowels. My praise shall be continually of you. He goes on here, by you have I am a wonder unto many, but you are my strong refuge. Let my mouth be filled with your praise and with your honor all the day. And that puts, again, another onus on us as we go through the losses in our life of it being examples of what our God represents and what our God is wanting us to reflect. Because if indeed we do have God's Holy Spirit And if indeed we do have the right goal in our mind for our life, and the overall riding objective is clear in our life of what our life is all about, dealing with this life's losses should be put into the perspective of the grander, greater, broader, larger scope of the purpose of your life, thereby adding for you the balance that you need in order to deal with the loss of a loved one, in order for you to deal with perhaps a wayward son or daughter, in hoping or helping you to deal with a loss of a job and getting back up on the horse and moving again forward and becoming more functional. Feeling sorry for ourselves, going into and conceding to the oh, woe is me kind of approach toward dealing with the things we contend with regarding our losses and allowing depression to overrun us is not, brethren, the God way. It's not the God way. The God way is to always maintain an upright and courageous mode of addressing the issues that we contend with and the things that we are dealing with in all areas of our lives. So the premise that we want to make sure that we understand is that all losses in dealing with depression should be tangible. And unless and until we're able to convert the non-tangible to real losses, to tangible, don't worry about them. Except in the sense of maybe perhaps necessarily strategizing and anticipating. But don't let them affect you emotionally in the dealing with the loss overall, because it can just, as I say again, make a bad situation worse. Now, what are non-tangible losses? As I've already said in passing, they kind of come in two forms, imagined and threatening. Imagined are exaggerations. They could be distortions, even from your own self being fed to you from your own anxieties, your own fears and phobias. That can cause you to have bad dreams. It can cause you to lose sleep. If you lose sleep, that even adds to the problem, because now you can start even hallucinating things, if you can believe that, because people that are deprived of sleep do end up doing that. That's not good. These are not good things. And what I'm talking about is very simple. You know, you get a lump under your arm. That's tangible. It's tangible. I got a lump under my arm. It's tangible. Immediately. Oh, I'm going to die! I got cancer! Immediately. Because I got a tangible lump under my arm. Now, what did I just do? I went into the non-tangible, didn't I? I'm going to die! I got a lump! I got cancer! And then I go to the doctor and I find out it's just a benign cyst. And so I went through all of those hoopla's and all of those gyrations and all that anxiety and all of that angst, perhaps even causing angst in the home with my wife or my children or my cat. I kicked it a few more times than I normally do, you know. My point is, that's the difference. And that's how it kind of plays out in real life. And we've got to be careful about these things. You in some cases, you have a roof that's leaking water. Tangible. The carpet's ruined, and my favorite chair's ruined. It's tangible. I'm depressed. I gotta replace my carpet, and my favorite chair's ruined. That's tangible. That's tangible. Oh man, the whole roof's gonna cave in. I don't have the money. What am I gonna do? And here all it needed was caulking around the flashings. You see, that's non-tangible. And I bring all this angst on me because I'm in the non-tangible area and I'm allowing that to affect me, and I'm getting more depressed over this whole thing because I don't have the money for a whole new roof, when in fact all I needed was to go out to Home Depot and get some tubes of caulking and put some caulking around my flashing, and I'm all set, you know. That's how some of these things play out. The kids are out past curfew. Oh, boy. Tangible? Flat tire. Cell phone was dead. Have to put that in there because everybody's got a cell phone. I'm at home. I'm dad. It's my daughter. Where is she? I knew I shouldn't have let her go out with that boy. Oh boy, I can just see this. She's not even coming home tonight. Where is she going to be sleeping tonight? You know, oh boy, all this angst, all this suspicion, all this, what you could say, frustration and aggravation. But that's all non-tangible. That's all non-tangible. What happened was, what's tangible? Had a flat tire. Cell phone was dead. So there you go. So those are imagined conditions and examples that play out in this chronic, acute, tangible, non-tangible scenario of which we all have to be aware of on how it interplays. Threatening is another one. Threatening losses, impending loss of potential loss. You hear a rumor that the company is going to be sold. And lo and behold, you find out, oh boy, the company is going to be sold. It's rumor. It's non-tangible. It's not sold. That's tangible. It's rumor. Now what do I do? Oh, I'm going to lose my job. Oh, I got to go back to college. Oh, I got to retrain myself. I don't have the money to go back. It's all non-tangible. And I'm all upset. And I'm all depressed. And that affects my relationship with Margie. Because when she talks, I yell at her now. Because I'm short-tempered over the whole thing. Because I'm frustrated at work. Because the place possibly going to get sold. And I'm possibly going to lose my job. And that means I'm going to have to possibly go back to school to retrain myself. And all of that's non-tangible. And I'm all upset over it. And so I take it out on her. And then she gets depressed. And she yells back at me. And now we got another problem. I got marital problems now on top of it. And the place wasn't even sold yet. And then lo and behold, guess what? It never does get sold. So these are all the way things kind of play out, that if we are not careful in possessing our souls in patience, we find ourselves making issues out of nothing. And you could go on and on. Terrorist attacks, fearing terrorist attacks in the threatening non-tangible area. Remember, non-tangible comes in two forms: imagined and threatening. Threatening could be, oh boy, I'm going to go to the mall and I'm going to get blown up. There's going to be a terrorist attack at the mall today. You know, I'm worried about terrorist attack because it just happened, you know, 300 miles away or 3,000 miles away in another place or another country. And that you know, ISIS is coming over here now and they're going to blow up the mall up there in Strongsville. And so I'm worried about all of this and I'm angst over all this. And I instill all these things in my kids and into my mate or my mom and my dad or whatever. Brother, there's only one way you can deal with threatening non-tangibles. Over here in Hebrews chapter 11. And we have to keep this in mind. We have a real God. He is in heaven. You're not going to be tempted with anything above that which you cannot handle. So keep this in mind. If you're going to contend with threatening non-tangibles, without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he that comes to God must believe. This is chapter 11, verse 6. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Real quickly here, 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4 in this particular case. And in verse 18, we read, there is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear, because fear has torment. You will torment yourself. You will put yourself through a proverbial emotional meat grinder for no reason if you live a life of fear. Christ said, be of good cheer. Do you know what that means? Again, let me remind you. We said it at the outset. It means be encouraged. Be emboldened. Why? Because you can be confident due to the fact that you've got a God that loves you and therefore wants you to be fearless in your performance of the duties that he gives you opportunity to serve in, whatever they may be. And so he says that perfect love does cast out fear. 1 John chapter 5, I won't read through here, but let me give it to you for homework. Read through verses 1 through about 5. Again, you will see some real encouragement here in this particular case. So in summary, focus on, zero in on this tangible loss. The other, the non-tangible, put it off to the side. If you do anything with it, if it's a threatening, like a lawsuit, maybe you're being threatened with a lawsuit. Okay? It's not here yet. It's not tangible. It's non-tangible. But there is a possibility. It's a lawsuit. Strategize. Use it for strategy. Possess your soul in patience. Don't get emotionally upset on the non-tangible, but get more emotional about the tangible and use that energy for addressing the strategy necessary to rectify whatever this tangible item may be. And if the non-tangible does present a threatening set of circumstances, do this. Take time to strategize, but don't take time to upset yourself over the threat. Just get busy and understand, strategize on the threat to figure out what the counterpoint, what the counterbalance, what the countermove is going to be. Like a chess game. It's like a chess game. And keep yourself in patience. Don't worry or be anxious in thought over the imagined and or threatening losses in the non-tangible category. Convert all non-tangibles to real, to tangibles. If you can't, keep it at bay. Keep it in perspective. Keep it on the side. And use your energy mostly focused on the tangibles. And if you do become depressed, no problem. Make sure it's only acute. Not acute depression, but acute. Temporary. It's short. It's only temporary. It's only for a short particular time that you're going to allow that. And the stipulation is to look for the lesson involved in the acute depression. Look for the lesson that you could learn or the character that still remains to be built in the acute section. And when you learn it, keep it and don't repeat it. And move on for the next opportunity of being depressed. Just kidding. Just kidding. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. Learn the lesson in the acute mode and or the amount of character, the type of character that you need to focus on. And in closing here, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, keep this in mind. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. That's so important, brother. You have a God factor. You have a God factor. It's not all secular. It's not all psychology. It is indeed something that can be handled by the inclusion of God in this whole equation. The God factor allows for the handling of both of these areas and the focus and the clarity so that you might be able to handle the non-tangibles and the tangibles.